To put it real simply, Which Way Home is a play about a father's love for his daughter. It's a road trip back to country from Ipswich, west of Brisbane, to around Gadooga in northwestern New South Wales, where the sky is higher and the world goes on forever. After a debut season in Melbourne in 2016 and a run at the Sydney Festival, this play has had a pretty solid life for a minimal two-hander. Actor and playwright Katie Beckett drew on her own life to write this play, a love note to her single Aboriginal father who raised his three kids despite a series of heartbreaking tragedies. When she was just 5 years old, Katie's mum died in a horrific car crash on her way home from a funeral. In the space of a month, her dad lost his own mother, his wife, and his sister. You'd be tempted after all that to bail out, but instead he stayed strong and did what he could to provide for his kids. Which Way Home is on a national tour, directed by Rachel Mazza and produced by Ilbidgery, the Melbourne-based Indigenous theatre company. Now, in this latest incarnation of the play, Katie reprises her role as Tash, with the multi-talented Kamahi Jordan King playing her dad.
I'd never thought it was going to go this big because originally it was just me just writing little things for my dad. I never dreamed of actually sharing it or showing it to everybody, and now it's the whole of Australia seeing it. Hopefully the whole world will see it eventually.
But you had a great run in the premiere season in 2016.
In Northcote Town Hall. Yeah, that was pretty amazing. It got such a great reception. And then again at the Sydney Festival, not the last Sydney Festival, the one before that, which was amazing. I mean, we got a sold out season with an extra week that season, which was pretty amazing. I was just amazed by how people really take it, and they really take it to heart, and it's hit so many people. We've had a show at St. Albans where we had little kids that were, 7 years old, teenagers, because it's on the VCE, what is it called? There's on the school list. I don't know what it's called down here. Yeah, on the school curriculum down here. And so we've had a lot of drama and English students that choose. There's like 5 plays or something they choose from. So we've had nearly every performance has had groups of school kids come in, and which is great to see them really respond to it at the end. You know, they're all crying and you hear them laughing all the way through it. And then you hear older people also connecting to it. So it's great to hear all generations and all different nationalities with just a story about how much I love my dad.
And that, do you remember we spoke when the show had its when it premiered in Melbourne, and the Bill Leake cartoon came out, and Which Way Home was this kind of perfect antidote to that kind of story about, you know, our fathers not being responsible and not being loving and not being kind and knowing our names. Do you remember that? I mean,
yes.
The timing was kind of exquisite in a way.
Yeah, it was, and it was a great I think my play was a great response to that cartoon in a sense, because that's not what our men are, and that's not what I see, you know, and that's not what I grew up with. You know, I grew up with strong, loving Aboriginal men that provide so much safety and provide so much for their family is what I've experienced. My dad was so strong and kept strong, you know, for us being a single father in the 90s especially, which I think was a even harder time, you know, and to take on that role and to make sure that we were safe. It's, you know, yeah, he was such a great man. And so I think the play really responded to that stupid cartoon.
Kamahi, you're joining the cast of this play for the national tour. What do you bring to this, the role of dad, the father of Tash, in Which Way Home?
Well, I guess I've got experience with all my nephews and nieces. Obviously, I don't have kids of my own, but I looked at the script, and when Katie rang me, the first thing I said was, "How old are you?" And she said, "Do you want to play my dad?" And I'm like, "What? What? How old are you first?"
That was
my. You got grey hair now.
Yeah, and we worked out that like I would have been 17, 18 if I was her dad in real life, so it was viable. But Rachel was a little bit worried because my face still looks really young, naked.
It does.
And yeah, so I had to sort of prove myself to her, but it's a physicality thing. Because there's flashbacks in there where he's young and vibrant, and then he goes back into this old man, and it's a physical thing. But for me to bring something, Rachel wanted something. Katie's writing determined how he was to be played. It was so well written. It was easy to read. I knew what to do. I found different responses, obviously, to the actor that played it before. And Katie was like, oh, that's not how, well, okay, we'll work with that. And, you know, so I bring a bit of myself to it. And I just remember my grandfather being a strong figure in our lives, all the kids. Like, he had so many grandkids, my God, all my cousins and that. And, yeah, just watching him and Uncle Alec Kruger from Alice Springs as well, who is my grandfather's brother, he used to come up and visit, and he was the one I sort of based my physicality on, because you know how old people walk and they have their hands behind their back, sort of clasped with a little bit of a bend? That's my old dad, and the young dad is chest out and real, you know, like full on stomping when he walks, like, yeah. So I just brought a bit of my skill that I picked up at ACPA, and Rachel directed me in the right direction of what she wanted. And Katie's writing made it easier, because we only had 2 weeks to put this together. Like, it's a remount. And as a new actor, I did not once read the script before I got here. We learnt it on the floor. And I learnt it on the floor because I wanted to have it in my body rather than trying to remember lines and just acting. I wanted it to be physically in there with memories and all that. And the only way to do that was to get it up on the floor and work it like that. And yeah, so we did that in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I was just amazed by the first 2 or 3 days how much Kamahi had already taken in and learnt and what he brought. It also changed my response to my character and the way my character interacted. And also, he even brought up things which I never even realised as the writer and as an actor, that I never even, like, clues and things which I never even noticed that I put in there myself, like subconsciously. And I've really enjoyed working with Kamahi and all the energy that he brings and all his experience and all his knowledge. And I've also learnt so much of him about even just the way of just watching him work, the way he takes in a script, the way he reads in between the lines. And I admire the way that he always tries to find the honesty and the truth in each part, in each section as well, in each character, in each, and the way he uses words and the way he thinks about words and the importance of words, which made me really understand that too.
Much to the dismay of our stage manager, though, because when you're working with a script and you work from the way I do with the truth and the memory in that, what will happen is you'll find the right memory and the right truth, but you might have a different word. It means the same thing, but it's the wrong word. And sometimes Brock has to go off exact words that we say. And she gets really annoyed at me because instead, there's one part there, I can't even think of it now. I have to be up. See, this is what I mean. When I'm not on that stage, I don't really remember the script or anything. But when I'm on there, it just comes back.
Yeah.
But, I hit different words, not the keywords that she needs to go to the next cue and stuff. She hates it.
Sounds like chaos.
It kind of is, but it's organised chaos. Yeah. It works.
So when you were growing up, I mean, essentially there's so much of you in this story, Katie. And as you say, it's like a love note to your father.
Yeah.
And to all the sacrifices he made to bring up you and your siblings. But just remind us who your dad is.
He's Les Beckett, Uncle Les, a lot of people call him. He is amazing. We lost my mum when I was 5 through that car accident, and they were coming back from my grandmother's funeral, my dad's mum's funeral. And then my auntie's sister died 2 weeks later in that same car accident because I didn't check her at Moree. And my dad stayed strong, stayed sober to raise us 3 kids up. We ended up losing my older brother, my dad's first son, from a regrowing brain tumour a few years later. But my dad still, and my uncle, his brother's got like a lot of mental illness, and then his other sister we think was murdered down here in Melbourne. So my dad still managed just to stay strong and just really focus on us. And, you know, I know that my grandparents, my mum's parents, my white side of the family, they wanted to take us, but my dad did what he could to keep us. And he went and got advanced diploma in community services and helped a lot of the Aboriginal men go from jail, transfer back into society and be members of society, and helped a lot with the drug and alcohol. He's a drug and alcohol counsellor, so did a lot of support work there for a lot of our people in Queensland and down in Western Sydney. Yeah, so, you know, I'm really proud of my dad just for being there and always, you know, always coming home. I knew that I was going to be safe and, you know, loved. And, you know, my dad would do what he could to make sure that we're always fed you know, there was this painter, and if we were real broke, my dad would go ring him up, and then he'd go give my dad $300-$400 and say, don't worry about paying us back, that's rent for the land that us white people have stolen. We never had to pay him back. Yeah, so no, my dad's always been good like that, and he's always, you know, my other family, my white family, weren't really happy about me wanting to be a writer or an actor. And I remember them telling me when I was like 11 or 12 that it was all just a pipe dream. I didn't know what that meant. And I went home and told Dad. Dad got so furious. He rang him up, yelled down the phone, how dare you tell my daughter that she can't follow her dreams? And so my dad's always done that and always supported. Like even now, my son's down with me. He's doing distance education. And Dad came down from Queensland, so they're sitting there at the moment doing any schoolwork on distance ed, and you know, your dad's following us around the country so I can do that and pursue what I want. And so, yeah, I really love my dad because I'm a single parent too. So my dad's there always supporting me and always helping me get to what I want and achieve, and always trying to, you know, even when I am, you know, not being the best person and making bad decisions, I've always got him to pull, you know, sit me down, talk to me and go, you know, look at what you're doing, think about your every action has a consequence and think about that. And so, no, he's good. Good man.
He sounds amazing. Now,
and have pretty annoying too.
Amazing and annoying. Oh, yeah. my dad, exactly the same.
Yeah.
Kamahi, it's great to see you back on stage. I haven't seen you on stage since The Shadow King.
Yeah.
And the very, very sad passing of that man who, you know, who was the star of that production. But the stage is where you're, I think it's your natural state, isn't it? I mean, the stage is where you feel more yourself.
I prefer it because you get instant accolade, you know, from the audience, and television is, I move too much for TV. I get told off all the time when I'm doing commercials or whatever because I'm a stage actor and television.
You're too physical.
Yeah, like movement, like
stand
I'll move out of shot. Yeah, exactly. But I would like to give television a shot. I may have an opportunity next year. But yeah, I'm actually saying that this is sort of the last play that I'll do, the last tour that I'll do, because I've got a lot of work coming up with the Othi Indian, the Treaty Project as well. Constantina Bush needs to get her ass up and get out there.
I was going to say, where is Constantina?
No, she has just come back from APAM, Australian Performing Arts Market in Brisbane this year, where we had four lots of interest, two international and two domestic, like Australia. And guess what? I can't do any of them because I'm busy. So what I have to do is then divvy up that me, Kamahi, can do Your Thin in the Treaty Project and be available for that, and then Constantina can do her Motown show, which is with a live band for once. So I've got, and it's David Spry and the Moral High Ground. They're my Motown band, and they're amazing. Just deadly. Like, and I had Shelley Morris as one of the bush hits backing me up in the APAM thing, so I was like over the moon, man. Well, just, Constantina was.
Just for those people who don't know, who is Constantina Bush?
Constantina Bush is a character I created in 2008. It came about by accident because somebody pulled out of a show for Out Black, which is like a local gathering of gay, GLBTIQ sister girls mob in Melbourne. And it just happened by accident because somebody pulled out and Brian said, you ever done drag before? And I said, no, but I can do that. That's just easy. It's miming. And he goes, oh, you have to audition for me. So I auditioned for him. And Brian Andy, that was. And I auditioned for him and he said, that's crap. So I said, well, what if I sing live? And I did. And that was it then. Constantina just took off. But I didn't have a name for her. And then I remembered, because it was just, they called Kamahi out on stage and I just came out dressed up like a girl. And then it was like, he goes, you need a name. And I remembered an incident where.
Oh, I love this story. I love this story.
So I had the opportunity in 2006 to meet Condoleezza Rice, the US Secretary of State for George Bush. And I didn't know what her name was. I forgot all about it. And I was like, what's her name? And the driver of the car, as we're going there, saying, it's Condoleezza Rice. She's the US Secretary of State. And I was saying it over and over in my head. By the time I got there, I was talking to her. I reckon, here you go, sis, this is for you, this little painting thing. And she's like, no worries. Gaiman invited us to the White House too, please, if we're ever in Washington. And my phone rang and I was like, oh, I've just got to take this. I'll tell him, I'll call him back. And then I'm like, Bruce, can I call you back? Because I'm at a lunch and you know, for that UN ambassador, Constantina Bush. And everybody around me, it was like, you know, those scenes where someone says something stupid and the music stops and everyone's just like looking, and it felt like that, trust me. And she was looking at me like, oh my God, you know, like shame job. And I just went, oh, Bruce, I got to go. And I just walked away from her. I didn't even go back to continue that conversation. I just left. Look. So, yeah, that was, and that's where I got her name from. I thought, yep, that's her name, Constantina Bush. And people do think it's a drag name because you know how people have clever names, like there's a girl called Nova and her last name is China. You can say that fast and you know what I mean. And then you've got Selma, Fork. And then when you go Constant in a Bush, you know, it's like, always in the bush, but it wasn't a drag name. It was just by accident. That's what I call Condoleezza Rice. And yeah, so I stole that name.
Oh, I love it. I love it because it's got a funny story attached and it's not your typical drag name.
Yeah.
And the Yothu Yindi, the Treaty Project, what are you doing with them?
I'm singing. I'm one of their, I sing lead on three of the songs. They're old songs and they're being revamped up to be more dancey. And so, yeah, I sing with them, I tour with them. We just did the Commonwealth Games closing ceremony, which was freaky, like just how many people were there and what it felt like. It was amazing to be on that platform.
Now, Katie, Which Way Home, yes. has your dad seen it many times? He would have certainly seen it.
Oh, he's seen it a few times. The first one that he came to was in Sydney at Belva at the opening there. And he absolutely loved it and he stole the show. Afterwards, me and Tony brought him up just to bow. But no, Dad takes over and starts singing and dancing for 20 minutes and just stole the show. And everyone's like, that should be the show, your dad dancing. Yeah.
What kind of dancing does he do?
Oh, it's really lame. It's dad dancing and it's embarrassing. And then he gets really into the song, closes his eyes, pretends he does air harmonica because my dad's a harmonica player. So then he'll do air harmonica and then, you know, do all that old 60s dancing like the mashed potato and all that stuff.
We should get him to get us two on stage doing a serious moment and getting tap dancing past in the background.
Katie Beckett and Kamahi Jordan King, the cast of the play Which Way Home, which is touring nationally, directed by Rachel Mazza and produced by Ilbidgery. The play will tour regional Victoria, South Australia, Western Australia, the ACT, New South Wales and Queensland. It's mammoth. Calling it Mildura, Port Lincoln, Bunbury, Tuggeranong, Orange. And the final show is in Mullaney in Queensland on the 18th of August.